This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
If you're ever in a situation of having an impossible task to overcome, an obstacle so big that no one can get around it, well, you need to hear the story we have today. We have running back of the NFL, Leroy Collins, joining us to tell us about his story of inspiration and motivation. And it's all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And boy, we have a great show for you today. A great story that's inspirational and really going to make you want to have some football going on, because we have a gentleman here that has an excellent story. His name is Leroy Collins, and we have him here right now. Leroy, welcome to the Pigpen.
Hey, thank you. Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Leroy, you have... a great story. A mutual friend of ours, Arnie Chapman, had interviewed you a few years ago on a great book that you had that's titled The Running Back, True Story from the Wheelchair to the NFL. And we are so excited to have you here and tell your story.
Oh, yes. I appreciate it. Yeah. with Arnie, I podcast back in 2020 when I first launched my book out. And so I got a chance to share my story then. And right now I'm in a cycle of relaunching a book and actually getting the story back out, because COVID kind of slowed it down a little bit. So now it's giving me an opportunity to actually get the book back out there. So people that missed the opportunity to read it, they get that chance now.
Yeah, COVID sort of dampened a lot of things in lives, including books. And you're not the only one. We have a lot of authors and folks that want to get their story out there that sort of missed the whole horrible thing happening to the world and sort of shutting everything down. So this is a great opportunity, and a great opportunity for us to hear about this in the football season. So why don't you, wherever you want to pick up on your story and, you know, tell us a little bit about it and, you know, get us excited about your book again.
Okay, cool. So first of all, if I want to start off, the book is called The Running Back from the Wheelchair to the NFL. And as I start to tell my story a little bit, you will see that it is a football book. It's going to talk about the NFL. It's going to talk about different things like that. But the title, I chose the title to be like a wordplay, kind of. And because as I tell the story and as you read the book, you will notice that I always run back to the goal and dreams that I set for myself when I was a kid. And so basically, if I had to run back to something, I mean, I was off track. That's why it's called The Running Back. And I put in bold letters, and from the wheelchair to the NFL. And the wheelchair is like, when I was a kid, I was in a car accident. It was actually, I was in an automobile accident. It was a truck. And the truck ran me over, and then and after they ran me over, the story get real gruesome, as you'll read the story. But I had died in that accident, and I broke 14 bones in my body. And after I came back, I was told I'd never walk or talk again. And so that right there is the magic of the story, is that I'm walking and talking right now. And then the title, obviously, I went to the NFL.
Well, awesome. So, I mean, not awesome about the accident, but, you know, overcoming something like that. That's especially when the doctors are telling you there's no hope and no chance of you being able to even walk or talk. But you're playing, you know, probably the most fearsome game of athletic prowess there is, in doing it at the highest level possible. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we are a faith believing family. So the doctor did have this diagnosis, and he, and not saying he was wrong, and he made a mistake, he knew what he knew, and he recorded what he the diagnosis that he came up with. But like I said, we believe in a higher power, and that was, I believe that was just a purpose and a mission for me, and it wasn't in my that wasn't going to be my end of my chapter, and I had a lot more to, you know, to talk about, to do in this world. So, you know, God did what he did. And so that was, that's what happened. So nothing from the doctor. The doctor, he knew what he knew, and he recorded and reported what was given to him.
Right. Now you said that, you know, after this, sometime after this, you had set some goals for yourself. So when did your goals first start occurring? And if you could share what your goals were.
So it was when I was a kid, I got out of the hospital, I was home, and I got a chance to, you know, be with the family. I was watching a game, football game on TV, and I was sitting on the floor next to my wheelchair. So obviously at that point, I'm unable to walk, but I'm talking, and you know what I mean? I'm playing with my brothers and sisters. I mean, I'm as much as I can, with my legs not working properly. But I'm watching a football game, and I just something came over me when I'm watching this game. It was like, man, I love this. I love this. I wanted to play it. I wanted to be part of that. And it was actually NFL. It was a, you know, I mean, it was a San Francisco 49ers game. So, and it was no Pop Warner or Little League game. It was actually the big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to play. And I just had this passion, desire to play. And as I watched more. I made that decision as a very, very young kid that I wanted to play in the NFL. And I told my mother, I said, Mom, I want to play in the NFL. I want to play football. I believe that was my first time watching football, was that time I saw it on TV. You know, when we was young kids back in the early 80s, you know, you got the, you know, four or five channels, you got the, you know, the analog turning thing. You got no push button. You got to turn it to a station, and
when you were the remote, like your parents would say, hey, you know, turn the volume down. You were the remote. You did that.
we were remote. Absolutely. Yep. We've been,
I remember. Saying,
so thank God for technology that, you know, we was able to get some other free time doing other stuff. But, so I just had this desire and this passion to prove that I can play this game. And I mean, it was like impossible because I was in a wheelchair. Yeah. I was, my mother had to carry me to the dinner table. She had to carry me to bed, had to carry me to take a bath. And you know what I mean? So she was doing these things to me. So they got kids go out to play. You know what I mean? I sit on the side of the hill and watch them play, or I sit in a wheelchair and they push me around in a wheelchair. So these are things, this was what's happening. But at the same time, in the back of my mind, I had this desire and this dream to play in the NFL, to play football. And I mean, I didn't even think about Pop Warner or think about high school ball, any of that stuff. Pop Warner didn't come about to me until years later. That's when I knew I had to start there. You know, mm-hmm. what I mean, I had to start there. But the desire for me to play in the NFL, I was doing extra. I was doing more. So my mother used to carry me around. I wanted that to stop. So I told my mother that I would try. I would do it my own. So at night, sometimes when everybody go to bed, go to sleep, I was up doing stuff. I was doing a physical therapy. I was just doing more of it. So I used to hold on to the bed rail, hold on to the dresser, hold on to the walls, and just try to take steps. The stretching that the physical therapy was showing me, I was trying to do those. As much pain as I was in, I was in so much pain. And you know what I mean? I felt a lot. There was a lot of pain. But the fact is that it didn't matter at that time. It didn't matter, even a young kid, because I felt that, I don't know who told me or where I was taught that, okay, you want to make it, you got to work harder. Because every time I told somebody I was going to go, I want to play in the NFL, it was either my mother telling me, yeah, baby, do whatever you want to do. Or somebody say, you can't even walk. What do you mean? You can't even walk. You can't play NFL. So I don't know exactly where that push came from, because at that time, nobody had that push for me. And it was just something that was, I think, instilled in me that you have to do more to get more. So you want to walk, you got to do more than what was prescribed to you. The doctors and physical therapy gave you this to do during when you were with them. And then, and I'm sure they gave my mother some instruction to do while I was home, but I never really did them with my mother. I did them by myself. And so, and it was just like all night and day, night and day. And then a year after I was had that desire and that dream and vision, I started taking steps on my own without support.
Wow.
And then, after I started taking steps and I started moving, I mean, it wasn't good steps, but it was steps without unassisted steps. So that was good. And then, I faced another hurdle. The first hurdle was you can't talk, or you're not gonna be able to talk. You know what I mean? It's gonna and I, you know, obviously, I woke up out of the hospital, and that hurdle was conquered. And then the walking thing, me taking steps, it's very, cripply walk. It was a cripple walk, but I was taking steps, and I had something to work on. Work towards now. I have something to work on. So, it just kept happening time after time. I got getting better and better and better. Okay, and that's when the Pop Warner came to mind, because the as I was walking, but it was with a really bad limp, they have football signups for Pop Warner, and so once I heard that, I was the first one in line, like saying, I need that permission slip. I need to go. So I ended up getting a permission slip and bring it to my mother and telling my mother, can she sign it? I said, I want to play football. And she turned me down right away. She's like, boy, you're not playing no football, because I was dead a year prior, or not crippled where year prior. So you're not playing football. And I said, Mom, I thought you said that I could play. I thought you said you, because she was not saying that. She lied to me, but she was wanting me to believe in whatever I want to do. But she was afraid to let me play, because it's a tackle, it's a violent sport. So she was afraid to let me play.
Those
And so
those
she
mother
turned down my.
instincts, man. The mother bear instincts are to protect the cub, doesn't want to see you get hurt again, I understand
Don't
that.
want to see me get hurt.
Right.
She don't see me get hurt. The last thing she want me to do is have somebody tackle me and land on top of me, or us run into each other. So she turned me down. She said no, and then I, I was, obviously upset about the situation, because now I have opportunity to actually play, to work my way to the NFL, and she said no. So I found other ways. I had my uncle, which was my support system. He was my very support system, because he was a guy that wanted me to play, and he was a football player himself. So and so he signed my permission slip for me. And I handed it in, and I was actually on the football team for a couple of weeks until my mother found out, and then I got kicked off the team again, which is another story that's in the book. But that was another trial. But yeah, so that was my first introduction to football. I signed a permission slip myself and ended up on the team for a couple of weeks.
Wow, I mean that's really brave. First of all, to do that with everybody, telling you against, excluding your mother and going behind your mother's back, which is probably a scary thing all in all itself. Doing that, I think we can all appreciate that. Now, what was the medical community saying about you playing football? Do they have any input into you playing a game like football?
Everybody. So the doctors, first of all, when I went to the doctor that actually gave my diagnosis and gave my treatment, when I went and saw him, because we had to go see every now and then, go see checkups and stuff like that. So when I went and saw him, automatically, you could see the tears coming out of his face, coming down, because he was like, "Is that you? I can't believe it," because he was 100% sure of what he thought. And because my spine was messed up, my pelvis was crushed, and I mean, so it was like everything, all nerve damage was all messed up. So he was sure of that I wasn't gonna be able to walk. And so when I walk in with a very crippled limp, he was like, first thing was like, "Is that you? I can't believe that. I can't believe that's you." And then, I mean, then we went on to tell him that, yeah, I mean, I'm playing football. I'm trying to play football now and stuff like that. And it was like, and that's why we had to actually do it, because the physical had to do a physical and all this other stuff. And this is like goes back into my mother kicking me off the team or whatever. But but he was just like so like impressed about my, me walking in there. And so they were still like, nobody was like, no, you shouldn't play, you shouldn't play, you shouldn't play. You're going to get hurt again. And then it came to the point that, okay, he could be on a team. He's not going to play much. He just wanted to be on a team to get a uniform. Basically, so I became the crippled kid that everybody had to protect, that just wanted to be on a team to be, have a uniform. Little do they know, in the back of my mind, I'm going to the NFL. You know what I mean? So nobody saw the vision that I saw. Nobody believed in me like I believe. So it was always that everybody protecting me, everybody looking out for me, everybody thinking, oh, because the whole community knows that. Now, my car accident happened in our small community, the whole city was there. The whole city was behind me on this thing. So they saw my recovery. They saw my rise from the wheelchair to the Pop Warner to, you know, I mean, all the way up to college and then to the NFL. So they saw me from the debt when I was dead, till I was crippled, till I, you know, wheelchair. And then, you know, I mean, they saw the whole rise, because we had a little small community. And at that day of the accident, the entire city was there, was at
Wow,
that scene.
nothing like having community support. That's but like you say, they probably still don't have the same belief that you do. They're saying, "Hey, the man can walk now. That's amazing." Or the child can walk now that was, you know, legally dead and not able to you know, even get out of his wheelchair himself. Had to have his mother carry him. And now they're saying, "Wow, this dude's walking around. This is a miracle." You know, at that point, that's, I mean, that's. But you're inside saying, no, I'm playing in the NFL. You still got that drive going. So where do you go from there? You go into
I
high school
still
ball?
got to try.
Do you go into high school ball
So
after that?
yeah, so I went from yep. So I went to once I finished Pop Warner, I did Pop Warner for a couple years. And then, but then eventually, it was like my second year, third year in Pop Warner, my limp kind of went away. I wasn't limping anymore, and I wasn't looked at as a handicapped kid anymore, because I made a dramatic play, which you will see in the book. I made a dramatic play, so I wasn't looked at as a handicapped kid that I wanted just wanted a uniform. I wasn't looked like that anymore. I was looked at as a football player for the first time in my life. I was looked at as a football player, and then so my third year of Pop Warner, I didn't make weight. So I didn't make weight, so I had to sit out a year, in which I was devastated. I was devastated. And then but then the next year came around, JV year came around, the next year, then I was able to play JV. And then that's when I was competing for a spot, a starting spot. And you know, I mean, obviously I didn't get it. But I was still playing. I was on a team, and I worked my way up there to be a starter, and then I, you know, went off to high school, ended up breaking the New York State rushing record for running
Wow.
back, and then, you know what I mean, then, you know, that right there is that's so put it this way, my first year of football, my very first year, the year that my mother kicked me off the team and ended up letting me back on, because I just wanted a uniform. And I wasn't gonna play that much, which they was right. I didn't play that much. That year I was a lineman, so I went from a lineman to a running back when I went to high school. And a lineman, when I was at lineman, they put me in there with the last 2 minutes left in the game, and they just put me in there just you know, put Collins out there, give him some playing time.
Yeah, right. Now, how much time elapsed then from that first season of your mother's kicking you off the team to your setting the high school rushing record in of New York State?
So the first year my mother kicked me, when she kicked me off the team, it was let me see. So I was 8, 9 years old, between 8, 9 years old. So you figured I did 2 years of Pop Warner, so 11, and then I had to sit out a year that I was too big, and then I came back about 12, 13, my first year at JV, and then their first year at JV, and I played 2 years at JV, and then I went at the varsity, and I when I played varsity, I took over the starting job. Did I take a starting job? I took over the starting job my junior year, and then I break it at my senior year. So
Wow.
maybe like 6 years, 7 years.
Holy cow, that is amazing. And
Yep.
the whole story is amazing. I think I'm just got the word amazing going through my head as you're telling me every step of the way here. That's some great stuff. So what was the feeling? Can you express in words what the feeling was, that year in Pop Warner when, folks are saying, okay, there's the handicapped kid, to now you're being recognized, hey, this is a player, and this is a player to be watched. This is a guy that's important to the team. What was the feeling like?
So it was always so I knew what my goal was. So a lot of stuff that happened to me, I missed out on a lot of stuff that happened to me on my way. You know what I mean? So because I had this so burning desire, because first of all, it never happened in my hometown. Nobody believed in me. And I was always criticized and always like, at the, point where I'm not big enough or I'm one head away from being or career being done. And so I miss a lot of it, but I did look back and was like, wow, nobody was giving me a shot. Now people are traveling hours to come see me play. And people that I didn't know, like we should shut the city down. So we just shut our like our hometown and any towns around us. So we had, we grew up in Hudson. So yeah, Hudson, Ichabod Crane, Chatham, and all these little towns around us. And we used to shut the I just our team used to shut the city down. We had people traveling far as an hour to come watch me play. And so just thinking about that, somebody that got on a football field for only 2 minutes in the game. And you just want to just put him, let him play because he won a uniform. To you know what, they're doing whatever they can to cancel their schedule to make sure to be there to watch me. So it was I got a chance to see that, but like you know what, that's a dramatic change. But that was a good testament to my determination and my relentless effort to become the best. And to also to stick to my goal and become, I mean, it was easy for me to train and get my body ready to like be different from a high school player, like different to get my body ready all year long for football because I didn't see high school and college as a destination. I saw NFL as a destination, so I knew I had to be ready for that. So it was that training thing that was in me, and plus I was behind the eight ball because I was handicapped. I was crippled. I had to hold on to stuff to take steps. So that was another thing that just gave me that work ethic too, like that I have to be ready. Be ready. It was never in the back of my mind that that thing could happen to me again or something. That was never a problem for me. It was always that how much better can I get? Like, how much more can I succeed? And you know what I mean? In the weekend, it's like sometimes I wanted to take a break because, I did a lot. My uncle used to push me, like, come on, no, get up. You know what I mean? But it's not that I was lazy. It's just like, I did a lot already. You're killing me. But the fact is that it was good for me because of the fact that, you know what I mean? Me as a human, even though I had desire, I burned out too. But so somebody that knew, saw my potential, was able there to lift me back up. So after a while, I had a support system. I had a support system, but still, there was still like majority still didn't think I was one hit away from career being done.
Wow. Now, I imagine that you had to have the scouts from the college teams just drooling over somebody setting a record or high school for a big state like New York, especially. And how was the recruiting process? And was it any different from any of your peers that were being recruited that didn't have a prior, weren't confined to a wheelchair prior?
So the magical part about this, the most amazing part about it is that what I did in high school, it was never done in our town, in our area. So as far as scouts, the way scouts were coming to school to see us, to see me, it was never done before. It was new for everybody. Like it was such a new process that the ACT, the ACTs and SATs and stuff like that. So you need all those. You need those right there to get into colleges. They weren't even teaching kids that process to get ready for a college, university, scholarship. Kids weren't being taught athletes. Kids were being taught that, but a lot of athletes weren't taught that to be prepared for the receive a scholarship and be able to pass a clearinghouse. So that whole process wasn't even a thing in my high school until I came, when I came about and made it a thing. I made it, I'm saying so. And it's like, oh, you got to take the SATs because this school wants you. Oh, that school wants you. That school wants you. Then it became like, now we got to start preparing athletes for college because now we can see it be, we can see it can happen now. So, but other than the clearinghouse and all this other stuff, I wasn't a student. So I wasn't, even if I did good on the SATs, I ain't doing good in school. I barely passed. I just graduated on time in high school, which held me back. But I had schools like Florida State, Michigan, Miami, you name the college. I got stacks of letters from every Division I school that wanted me. I used to talk with Bobby Bowden on the phone, so I used to have a conversation with him. I used to call his house. So I wanted to play Florida State. That's what I wanted to play for college. But so it became that it was like not known for what was happening. Like North Carolina came from North Carolina to come to my school to watch me walk by. Just to watch me walk, just to see my physique and see what I look like. So they have a scout come watch me just to, can't say nothing to them, but they want to see me. Oh, Leroy, come down, walk down by the gym. So I walked down by the gym. I got a scout there watching me walk by. So it was just different for a whole town. So it was something. But now what I'm happy about is that now the school understands the importance of it. And kids are now getting opportunities, and they're getting kids prepared for college that has an opportunity with scholarships.
That's great. So you put your school on the map for these major colleges to pay attention to, and you help the school to open the doors to say, okay, here's how we're going to promote our athletes to get them further education. That's awesome.
Exactly. Yep. So yep, I mean, we had great athletes, but not saying we had great athletes before me. Great athletes before me. But the level where I took it had never been done before, and now there's guys going, still got guys going pro from our school, so it's a big turnaround for what it used to be.
Very cool. So what college did you end up choosing from those stacks of letters?
So I end up from for I honestly I went to none of those letters, none of the colleges I went to, I had to get a letter from. I went to University of Louisville as far as the D1 school I went to, but right out of high school, which you were reading a book, I went to Dean Junior College, and then I got kicked out of college,
Ugh.
and then I went back into college, and I started running back to my dream, running back. You know what I mean? That whole running back thing, get back on track. So I got kicked out of school. And then I and as you read the story, you'll see why I didn't get out of school, which I deserve to. And then I got back on track and went to Alfred State. And then
Okay.
from Alfred State, I got a scholarship to University of Louisville.
Wow. Great story, man. That's a great trip. That takes a lot
Yeah.
of determination too, especially having, setbacks and you're maybe not at the level you want to be in, but I mean, hard work and, determination just keeps you, jumping up and getting to the levels that are going to get you noticed by the NFL scouts, a lot more than some of the other schools. So great job.
Yep,
Yeah.
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so what was okay, so after college, what was the process of the National Football League? How were you getting noticed by them, and what was going on there through your draft journey?
The story goes back to when I got to Louisville, Louisville. And when I got Louisville, I wasn't the first string, second string guy, or even a third string guy. I was number three and a half. You know what three and a half is?
No, go ahead and
I was
share.
a backup to the third string guy. And saying so basically I can't make it to the NFL from that position, right? So now I had another hurdle to cross. So I started training, I started working out. First game comes by, I get a chance to get into the game. I mess up in the first game. I get benched. And now I'm just like, now everything is against, the whole world's against me now. Now my whole world crumbled in. My whole world crumbled in because we lost that game, that first game. We lost. And I think I contribute to that loss. And I'm devastated. So at that point is a turning point in my life. Even at that point, that I had to either show them who I was, or I was gonna give up. I was gonna let it go, let it all go. Oh, I had to show them. I had to show them why I was there. I was there for a reason. I'm not there to be number three and a half, you know. So I turned up, and there's a process why how it happened. But I turned a new leaf, man, and I went into practice, and I became a different person, a different player. And then the coaches start taking notice of that. You know, they say it's very hard to take a person's position, right? A person that's a starter or a person that's ahead of you. It's hard to take that person's position because he's there because the coach noticed something about him that they like, right? And you where you are because a coach don't like something about you. You know what I mean? Or he think you fit there. So I had to become somebody different and show them who I was. So I went out there, became a different player, and I worked my way up from three and a half to second string to number one running back. And
Wow.
then I went on to break the school record, the school touchdown record. I was top 10 in every other category at running back. And I was a junior. I was a junior and on the football field, but I was a senior in high school in classes. You know what I mean? So I had another year to come back, had a redshirt year to come back to play, but I could graduate that year with my degree because I did that redshirt year at I made up that year at from Dean. So that whole thing, the whole debacle, I wish I don't regret nothing because my life is I have a tool now, an educational tool that I can teach young athletes coming up. But I wish I had more guidance through the draft process back then. Because once I declared myself eligible for the draft, I was a junior on the football field, but I was a senior in classes. But it was, they said, wise or needed for me to come back for that senior, that another year of college football. And I didn't come back. And the reports came out about my car accident. They was like, I became a ref. I became the top. I was top in the draft. I was a top 24 in the draft. That would put me at first round. And I went from there to becoming a red flag because they said I had head injury because I had brain trauma. The truck ran my head over when I was a kid. So I became a red flag and saying, so even though I had no injuries throughout the year of my life of head injuries throughout the career up to the NFL, they still became an issue. No team wanted to take a chance on me, so my stock started dropping. I went from the first round to the second round to the third round to the fourth round to almost the fifth and sixth round. I was fifth and sixth round the entire draft, and then it was up to one of those teams to take a chance on me. Nobody took a chance on me, so I went as a free agent to Washington. So as I went, well, I went to the Commanders, but I was the Redskins at the time. But when I went to the when I went to the Redskins, I had to compete there for another shot. And as you read in the book, that right there became another debacle. I could have walked away. I kept going, and then I ended up getting released from Washington. And I got picked up by the Jaguars, and I was with the Jaguars for 2 years. And then, you know what I mean? Then I went on as a they call a journeyman, and a journeyman to go from one professional team to the next one.
But still, man, that is like so motivational and inspirational for folks that have no limitations of your body getting, run over by a truck and confined to a wheelchair. Your drive, sir, is amazing through all the obstacles that are thrown in your way. And your faith is sounds like it's a very strong part of that too. So we appreciate you and applaud you for both of those. And I assume
Yes.
your family has got to be so proud and so glad
Yeah.
that they were incorrect in what they were thinking when you were a youngster and had
Yeah.
everything against you and you overcame it. Amazing story. Amazing.
Yep. So they definitely have my, they understand when I usually when I say something, usually when I say something, they anticipate it happening. Because if I say it, I kind of researched it already and I thought about it. I thought about the pros and the cons. And so if I usually say it, I throw it out in the universe. I throw it out there because I'm looking for it to happen. And so now they're anticipating for it to happen as well because they see well, my relentlessness and my determination that it might not be happening the week or 2 weeks. It might be a year, but they know that when I say it, eventually it's going to happen.
Now, just out of curiosity, now let's say, knowing what you know now, if you could go back in time and tell your young self that's in a wheelchair, sitting on the sidelines, watching your family and your friends play football, and you wishing to, what would be a message that you could give to your younger self or to others out there, maybe in the same situation or have to overcome something to reach their dreams? What would that message be?
So I would tell my younger self is tell him my if I'm here now and I could go whisper in my younger self ear, I would tell him, continue doing what you're doing. Work hard. Continue working hard, but ask for help. Act, don't be afraid to ask for help, to ask for guidance, to ask for assistance. But you're gonna do great things, you're gonna do amazing things, you're gonna change millions of lives. You're going to touch lives, people you ain't never meet before. But, and you're on your journey to wherever it is you're going to go, which I know where it is, start asking for guidance and ask for some help. That's what I would tell myself.
That great message, man. That's great for anybody. That's very inspiring, and a lot of folks, including us adults and older folks like myself, could use some of that. So that's a great
Yep.
message. Why don't you share once again, Leroy, what the title of your book is and where folks can get a copy?
Yeah, so it's called the Running Back from the Wheelchair to the NFL. It goes deep into the details of the story of me coming from, I say, from death. I died for 8 minutes. Come from there to having this dream to make it to NFL. You can buy the book on Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, any site that sells books. You can buy it from anywhere, any place there. An Audible version is coming out soon, and it's on digital, so it's digital, Audible, it's hard copy or a soft copy, and then after you get the book, be ready for book number two coming up, and then be ready for a movie. We have a movie scripted out, and the movie is in the making. It's in the
Wow.
making.
Awesome. That is definitely something to look forward to. And folks, we're going to put, if you're driving a car or unavailable to write down the information, we're going to put the title of the book in the show notes of this podcast and the YouTube channel. Get you a link to get right to Leroy's book on Amazon, and so you can get a copy of it yourself and get reading the first part because war is coming, just like he said. We got this
What's
part two
coming?
and movie coming. So awesome story, sir. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing it with us.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate for having me here. Thank you for having me.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, But as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.